News. Health officials at the CDC now say 33 people across 24 states have died from vaping-related illnesses. This is ABC News.
Hi, my name's Christina Stumble, and I own Farm Girl Flowers in San Francisco. With my Spark Cash Card from Capital One, I earn unlimited 2% cash back on all my business purchases. Last year, I redeemed $115,000 in cash back. Yeah, $115,000. And that doubled our digital marketing budget for the summer. Thanks to my Spark Card, we had our best summer yet. Imagine what the Spark Card from Capital One could do for your business. What's in your wallet?
Real Capital One customers pay for real stories. Credit approval required.
Hi there, saver. Looking for a Medicare plan to help you save on more than just prescriptions? Medicare Advantage plans may offer prescription drug, medical, and hospital coverage. Walgreens is a preferred network pharmacy with many Medicare Advantage plans, including UnitedHealthcare. So when you enroll in a plan with Walgreens as your preferred pharmacy, you know you're saving smartly. Walgreens, trusted since 1901. Other plans may be accepted.
Protests continue in Barcelona, Spain, as pro-independence protesters clash with police. They're angry over the sentencing of 9 separatist leaders convicted of sedition.
In the daytime, the protests have been fairly peaceful. People shouting for independence and holding banners reading freedom. But as night falls in Barcelona, their words turn to action. But it's action which is violent. Many people in Catalonia have long fought for it to break away from Spain and become a new European country. But their bid for independence has been rejected, and now the anger has spilled out onto the streets.
Inzamam Rashid with our partners at Sky News reporting from Barcelona. The Chinese government is cracking down on exports of black clothing to Hong Kong. That's in response to ongoing protests. Pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong have been wearing black T-shirts and jeans. Protests initially erupted over a now withdrawn extradition bill. Trevor Ault, ABC News.
Fox Sports trending now.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver today revealed more details of what actually went down in China after Rockets GM Daryl Morey sent his free Hong Kong tweet just a few weeks ago.
We were being asked to fire him by the Chinese government, by the parties we dealt with, government and business. We said there's no chance that's happening. There's no chance we'll even discipline him.
Silver was speaking at the Time Magazine Health Summit today and says he was actually surprised by the response that they got from the media and from what was happening back home about the NBA's response to China and Daryl Morey's tweet. Astros and Yankees tonight, game 4 of the ALCS, 8 o'clock Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1. Astros lead the series 2-1 on Fox. It's the Chiefs and Broncos to start Week 7. Miami Herald says Dolphins running back Kenyon Drake is being shot prior to the trade deadline in 2 weeks. I'm Dan Beyer.
We are Fox Sports!
Bulls high on weather on AM 930 and 100.3 FM. Overnight, brisk, maybe patchy fog. Low near 43. Patchy fog possible early Friday, then a few clouds. High near 55.
It's Bulls Eye on the Afternoon with Andy Bull Barch and Matt Douglas.
They like jet airplanes. Woo! They like long limousines. They like fine clothes.
On AM 930 WEOL.
Twelve minutes after 4 o'clock, it's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL at 100.3 FM. I'm Andy Bullbarch. I'm joined, as always, by Matt Douglas. And we are joined in studio here in hour number two. You heard the nature boy Ric Flair talk about long limousines and jet planes. Our very next guest, he deserves both of those, not only for all the work he does with the Frontier League, but boy, does he do some traveling throughout the course of the summer. He is the deputy commissioner of the Frontier League, and he's kind enough to join us here in studio, Steve Tassler. Steve, welcome to the show, man. How are you?
Doing great, Bull. Many times I've been on, first time to actually make it to downtown Elyria and see you in action in person. So very impressive operation here.
Oh, well, thank you. We appreciate that. That might be the first time we've heard that. So, I suppose if I knew how to work the equipment here, it would help me. Matt Douglas is dying to get in on the conversation. Yeah, I forgot to flip his microphone on. But
I was just going
to
say, I mean, most people are like, oh, I'll do the show from a distance next time. I'll just call in next time. I kid.
Yeah. They get in studio and they see, wow, well, now we understand why you guys aren't on TV. Yeah, that's right. Typically
you know
what
I'll just go downstairs and give you a call. That's typically how it goes.
Well, we have you here in studio because of the big news that was announced yesterday. The Frontier League and the Can-Am League have joined forces. The merger was officially announced yesterday. Very, very exciting news. And, boy, we heard some snippets of this throughout the course of the summer. You know, they played that All-Star game together. How long had this been in the works?
Talks started February of 2018 when Bill and I were invited down to the Can-Am League owners meeting just to see if there was anything there, to see what common problems and common solutions the two leagues had. Good reception down there to begin with. We kept talking throughout most of 2018, had a couple of big in-person meetings, and decided at that point we didn't have enough time to properly plan any type of joint agreement of this magnitude, and we didn't want to rush it. So we kept talking, met in Arizona, had some of the people come out to our meetings in Arizona at the end of November, met again in March, went to their meetings a few weeks later in March, had the All-Star game. Great time at the All-Star game, and that's really what got us over the edge, was getting all of our people and all the Can-Am League people together at the All-Star game. 3 days to get to know each other, to understand each other's issues. We came out of the All-Star game saying, big picture, we're on the same page with everything. Obviously, some small details to work out, but we're not going to let the small details override the big picture. So then we took the next couple of months to iron out those small details, get it to a smooth platform that everybody could agree with, and probably third week of September, we officially got the paperwork signed, got everything taken care of. Then we wanted to make the right announcement at the right time and not rush it, and we were able to do that in Washington, Pennsylvania yesterday. Tremendous feedback. We were overwhelmed with the number of people that watched online, the number of media outlets from both the United States and Canada that were submitting questions through the live feed, and the stations that picked up the audio, that picked up the video for the TV news stations, the newspaper reports. We were on Yahoo News last night. Everything just worked out tremendous in the announcement the way we wanted. We hope that's just a good sign of bringing the five Can-Am League teams into the Frontier League beginning right now, going forward, and putting us at a 14-team league that spans from the Mississippi River to the Atlantic Ocean.
Let's hammer down some of those benefits as well with the expansion. I mean, some of them are certainly going to be obvious. You're into some markets now that you weren't into before. There's certainly a much larger reach as well. And I think you guys put that succinctly in the release yesterday. I mean, you're going from the Atlantic Ocean all the way to the Mississippi River. I mean, that's absolutely huge. But give us an idea from your perspective, what are the true primary benefits of this merger?
Benefit is bringing strong ownership groups into our existing fold. We're bringing teams that have been around, that have been successful, that have good operators in markets where they are established, and bringing them into the Frontier League model, which gives us just a boost in terms of ownership strength, in terms of the quality of the people on our board of directors. Then also geographically, it exposes us and gives us the opportunity to go after markets in a different area of the country. And one of the benefits for the former Can-Am League teams is they've been a six-team league for several years. They're now part of a bigger organization with a bigger footprint, and that just makes it easier for them to sell their product and to, you know, justify it. You're bringing new teams, you're bringing new fan bases into those communities, and at the same point, you're taking and exposing our communities to their fan bases as well.
Variety of opponents, I think, certainly helps out a ton from a fan's perspective, especially in the Can-Am League. I would imagine that helps, because if you were a fan of one of those teams, you saw the other five teams quite a bit throughout the summer. But now you're talking about a 14-team league. I've got to ask how the classifications are going to work. You know, one of the things that makes the Frontier League so great is a lot of times you get guys who play really well, then they get a second crack with an affiliated club. Or you have some guys fresh out of college that for one reason or another, they were overlooked in the scouting process, never got drafted. They get an opportunity to make it. And because you have different classifications with different age ranges, it gives different groups of guys a chance to succeed. The rules in the Can-Am League were a little bit different. So how's that going to work, and how are the classifications going to change moving forward with this league?
I'd say the classifications and the player issue is part of the 20% of small stuff that we still had to work out. we knew we were on the same basic page. We knew there were going to be some things that needed compromise on both sides. And, you know, the player side was one of them. What we ultimately agreed to get the deal done is the Can-Am, those five Can-Am League teams are coming into the Frontier League, which means they're going to play by our regulations, play by our rules, play underneath our bylaws. However, as any team in the Frontier League that's a full, now they're full members of the Frontier League, any member, any team has the ability to propose changes to our structure. They just go through a rules committee for a recommendation, goes to the board of directors for a formal vote. So that's how we left it with the incoming clubs, is you're going to come underneath our model. However, once you're in, you've got the same right as any other team to make requests or propose changes to see if there's a way to tweak or improve our model. So that's where we are right now. As of today, it's the same classification structure, same rookies, same everything as it was in 2019. Now, when we meet in Scottsdale, when we do our annual owners meeting next month, that's got an opportunity to change because they'll have the same right as the Lake Erie Crushers, as the Evansville Otters, as the Joliet Slammers, to make a request and bring an item up for examination, and it gets brought up and it gets studied. We've got a rules committee of three different field managers. Cam Roth is one on the committee this year. They review it. They give their recommendation. They give their pros and cons, what they think. It goes back to the board of directors now that it's been vetted a little bit. Then it goes for a full vote. So we're in that process right now of some ideas that they've brought to us. Some ideas are new from them. Most of them actually were already discussed quite a bit internally even before everyone realized this deal was going to get put together. So I don't think it's going to be anything drastic, but I can see some changes to our structure going forward.
Very cool stuff. Again, Steve Tasler, Deputy Commissioner of the Frontier League, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon, talking about the merger that was announced yesterday, the Frontier League and Can-Am League joining forces, a 14-team league in 2020. And I've always found that interesting, too. I mean, I think it'll be really, really fun over the next month or so. Maybe it'll be fun for us from the outside looking in. You're kind of at the heart of these discussions. Maybe it's not as fun for you, but I'm anxious to see what kinds of ideas come of that. And as I sit here and speak to you, I'm thinking of all the Frontier League legends of yesteryear, Andrew Davis being one of them. He was constantly in your ear and Bill Lee's ear talking about raising the age limit and things like that. And the more we talk about this, seems like that's certainly kind of a possibility. I know that's got to be hammered out, but it seems like that's certainly something that could come to the forefront here, no?
I'm sure that's one that'll be discussed. And I'm sure there are good arguments on both sides. But, you know, raising the age limit is one that's most likely going to be proposed and discussed. And like I said, we'll probably work some compromise out between where the Can-Am League has been playing, where the Frontier League has been playing. So we keep our basic model and we keep our focus on the younger players while at the same time allow them to tap into some of the marketing aspects you get when a guy like an Andrew Davis is in your team for 6 years and he's a known product in the community. You know, Andrew especially being an Ohio guy playing in Avon, Ohio. They've got some Quebec players. They've got some New York players playing on their individual teams as well that we'd like to, they would like to figure out a way so they can benefit from, you know, the marketing, the public relations aspect of these ball players.
You mentioned the two, I believe there's two Canadian teams that are coming into the league this year. Does that make it a little more exciting to have that international flair kind of added to the league?
It does. You know, I think it really does, especially our league office is in St. Louis. I live in St. Louis. We were talking off the air about the Blues winning the NHL. There are people in St. Louis that remember the Quebec Nordiques coming into play. When this first came up, the Quebec ownership group said, my fans would absolutely go ecstatic to say that the St. Louis and Chicago and Pittsburgh, home of the Blues and the Penguins and the Blackhawks, and, you know, Ohio, home of the Blue Jackets, are going to be coming to Quebec. That's how we're going to push this. St. Louis, home of the Blues, is bringing a Frontier League team to play in Quebec City.
Nice.
So, you know, yeah, they're excited. Their tourism people are excited about being able to reach out. And at the same point, our towns are excited as well. Rich Sauget, who's the league president, his ancestors go back 17 generations to Quebec. And he's got a detailed family history. You know, St. Louis has a huge French population. They're excited. They're going to tie into that somewhat as well in terms of the French-speaking, you know, Quebec and Three Rivers is how you say it in English. We're still trying to work out the exact French pronunciation.
I saw that as well. I wasn't going to try it. That's why I said I saw two Canadian teams.
Canadian teams. Quebec's easy. Yeah. Quebec's a little easier to get out than Trois-Rivières. But we'll eventually get it down the right way, so we do them proud as they come visit our clubs. But it's exciting on both sides. Our people and our markets are going to be able to have international teams coming in from a different country playing the O Canada, just having different customs and things brought to them, while the Quebec teams are going to be able to have, like I said, they're going to be able to have Columbus Blue Jackets, Chicago Blackhawks, Pittsburgh Penguins, and St. Louis Blues, and markets like that that they can pitch to their fan base as, this is who's coming in. The Gateway Grizzlies, home of the St. Louis Blues.
Well, it creates a bit of it has a natural rivalry with the two countries being side by side. And speaking of hockey, I was at a Jackets Maple Leafs game last year, and the anthems played, as you just mentioned, and oh, Canada, man, they were belting that out. So you got that feeling like, well, we got to respond. So the fans started singing the national anthem, the U.S. national anthem. So it kind of creates some natural rivalries with that addition as well with the Canadian teams, doesn't it?
It will. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. And then you add in the French component.
Yeah.
I heard you talking earlier. We were in Canada before in London, Ontario. London halfway between Detroit, Toronto, fully English city.
Mm-hmm.
Quebec City, Three Rivers, exact opposite, fully French. So that's going to add – it's going to add excitement. It's also going to add some bit of a challenge, but it's going to be a fun challenge as we learn to translate our documents into French. That was one of the first requests we had of – as we're sending the announcement out, the people from Quebec call and say, we need this a couple of days in advance so we can make sure that the grammar and the punctuation correctly translates into French.
Sure.
Stuff we hadn't had to deal with before, but it's fun. It's a good challenge. It's exciting.
When you talk about the excitement of them taking some of those NHL teams, too, I've heard nothing but good things about Quebec City. I hear it's beautiful up there.
I go up there in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I get to go to Quebec City for the first time. All everyone says is, it's absolutely beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. But in January and February, it gets a little chilly.
Yeah.
It gets a little snowy. But everyone loves Quebec City. Everyone who has been to Quebec City just has amazing things to say about
it. That's what I've heard.
It may get wintry in January. That's why you're going in November, right? Or at the end of October.
end of October, yes.
Not your first rodeo. That's why you're going Halloween time and not on Valentine's Day. There's a method behind your madness.
Yes.
I know that. We're not going to hold your feet to the fire like they did with Bill Lee yesterday, making him sing O Canada. And he actually did a welcome in French yesterday. That was pretty impressive that Bill was able to pull that off. He did bring you up on stage yesterday to talk about some of the working visas and things of that nature and how that kind of factors into all of this as well. So if you can kind of explain how that comes into the mix here as well. I think that was primarily posed because of some of the complications some think may arise with some of the international players. But I thought you gave a great explanation yesterday, really kind of putting those doubts to rest.
Really, if they're able to get into the United States with the right paperwork, they're going to be able to get into Canada with the same paperwork. And that's the biggest key, is making sure their paperwork is set when they arrive in the United States, having their valid passports on them, having their P-1 visa, which is a special visa for athletic or entertainment groups. And it's a very same visa that the guys in the Cleveland Indians have, is the P-1 visa. We qualify under the same provision. It's a very specialized process. It's not a quota system as a traditional work visa, an H-2B visa is. This is strictly based on ability. So you have to submit a lot of paperwork to determine or to be able to say this specific ball player is a player of exceptional ability and that's why he deserves the work visa. Once you get that paperwork in, that paperwork that gets him in the United States will be able to get the player into Canada and back into the United States as well.
One of the things that the Frontier League certainly has prided itself on, and I know Bill alluded to this in the press conference yesterday, the presence of all of the guys who have in some form or fashion been associated with the Frontier League, whether that be front office, coaching, players. Robert Ford, who is the announcer for the Houston Astros from a broadcasting perspective, there's a strong presence of Frontier League alumnus alive and well in Major League Baseball. And I think that's a big part of this as well. Now you're working with 14 teams, two different countries. You're in markets that you weren't necessarily in before. There's a lot of excitement because there's a lot of opportunity for guys playing in the Frontier League now who really have a chance to catch the eye of those who are scouting and working in development in Major League Baseball too.
It's amazing when you look at the number of players and the number of personnel that has come out of the Frontier League and has very high positions in Major League Baseball. From the on-field, from the hitting, we think we have four Major League hitting coaches, one assistant hitting coach, and one Major League Baseball pitching coach right now. We have Robert Ford, the radio broadcaster for the Astros, plus Aaron Goldsmith with the Mariners and Jason Benetti, the TV announcer of the White Sox, all got their professional starts in the Frontier League. We've got two umpires that got their starts in the Frontier League. We have a Major League Athletic trainer that came out of the Frontier League. We have a Major League general manager in David Force to Oakland, an assistant general manager, Brian Chatton in Miami, got their starts in the Frontier League. And they follow us. And that was one of the great things is as we're doing this conference, and I'm sitting as my phone, sitting in my phone off to the side to feed Bill the answers if he got stuck on anything, and also to make sure that the live stream was working well, I'm getting text messages from our former players and our former coaches that are with major league organizations at high levels congratulating me on the announcement, and that they still follow us and are engaged and stay involved. That's one of the great special things about the Frontier League. That's how we've been going after 27 years is just tremendous loyalty from the people that started in the Frontier League. Some, like myself, are in here after two decades still. Others have moved on to different organizations, but still follow us and still care.
We've got to ask you about the scheduling, and I know the schedule is coming out on Monday, and you know we're not going to dive into the hardcore details of this. I know you guys want to save that for Monday. But speaking of Mondays, my first question to you was, are Mondays still built-in off days? And you mentioned that yes, and there's a method behind that madness.
There is. I think it was 2014 or 2015 was the last time we had the sequence we're going to have in 2020, where you have a very early Memorial Day and you have Labor Day as late as possible. What that did is it really gives you an extra week of summer. When that happened, our season goes 17 weekends and 16 midweeks. When that happened back in, it was 14 or 15, it just worked out that we were able to take every Monday as an off day. With the number of off days, having that bonus week of summer between Memorial Day and Labor Day, that gave us enough calendar days to play with so we could make every Monday an off day. And it just worked amazing. Everyone loved it. The teams loved it. The office staff loved it. You're not trying to push Mondays. The players and the coaches loved it. It gave them a guaranteed day off each week they could plan for. It made travel so much easier. You now go to your traditional Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday series. And it worked so well in so many ways. When the next year it flipped, 2 years later it flipped and we lost that bonus week, everyone said, we're going to stick with the same format, even if we have to start earlier. This year we started on May 9th, the earliest we ever started. But it worked taking the Monday off days because we had got our system in place, and there's so many benefits to it from the business side and the baseball side that outweighed any of the negatives. You know, fortunately, in the last couple of years, overall, we've had pretty good early May weather. I think this year you had a 45-degree drizzle game in Lake Erie to start.
Oh, yeah.
But overall, the last few years, it's been 60s, 70s. Even we had pushing 90 in one of the games in St. Louis on the opening weekend this year.
Wow. What a sharp contrast. 90 on an opening weekend in St. Louis, and we get 45 and rainy. Yeah. It was freezing up in that booth. Absolutely freezing, but that's all right. Well, the scheduling obviously going to be a little bit complicated. Again, we'll find out more when the schedule is released for 2020 on Monday. Obviously, with 14 teams, it's going to be challenging, and there could be some flights involved as well. How does some of the scheduling formula break down? With 14 teams, you mentioned that you'll play 11 of the 13 possible opponents. Every team's looking at that, right?
Actually, every team will play every other club. You will only visit 11 markets.
Okay.
Our original goal when we did the schedule, when we first put it on paper, was to have every team visit and host each team at 13 at 6 to 78, and then you would play an additional set of games against your closest rivals. When you actually go to put it in the grid, it didn't work out as easy. It gave you some travel complications. It gave you complications when you've got the MAC tournament, when Southern Illinois has the Ohio Valley Conference tournament, when Washington has the Pennsylvania Athletic Championships, when Bossy Field and Evansville host the state playoffs. Certain teams can be home July 4th. Certain teams want to be home July 4th. Other teams can't be home July 4th because of other activities in town. So there's so many variables that go into doing the schedule. When we finished a schedule that had the original format, it just looked ugly, and it was not feasible. So we came back and tweaked it and tried to see what can we do to improve this in draft number two. And at that point, we did a kind of a modified version where you're going to play five teams 12 times each, so two trips to each of those five cities, five teams 12 times for 60. You're going to play your next closest set of teams next four teams are going to play six times each, one at home and one on the road. And then the final four teams, you either visit two of them and the two you don't visit, you host.
Okay, simple enough.
So you are playing everybody, and that's one of the keys, is everybody wants to play everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, the comment I hear from fans, and one of the joking matters is, we don't care who you're playing as long as it's somebody different. They don't want to go. Sure. The family that goes once a month to see the Lake Erie Crushers, if the Florence Freedoms show up every time they come, that gets a little old. Now, whether it's Florence or Joliet or Rockland or Sussex County, that's not all that important to them, but it's something different.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the key, is we wanted to have as much variety as possible. And from our markets, they want to have exposure to as many other markets as possible. You know, the Washington County tourism people made a big deal. We're going to be able to market ourselves now to Metro New York, to the Hudson Valley, to New Jersey, and up into Canada. The Quebec people are really excited about St. Louis and Chicago and Cleveland and Cincinnati and Pittsburgh coming in. Your towns like Evansville, Indiana, and Marion, Illinois, get the luxury of saying New York and New Jersey are coming to small-town America. So, you know, benefits everywhere. And then you've also, you know, the baseball side. If you're going to be in a league, you need to be able to have some credibility to the league and not make it just a paper lineup. And part of that is you play the other teams in the league. You know, the Cleveland Indians play the Seattle Mariners every year because they're in the American League. Even though it would be a lot easier to play the Cincinnati Reds and the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Atlanta Braves, they're in the American League. Seattle's in the American League. You're going to play three at home, three on the road every year. Similar concept.
Good stuff. Well, Steve, we know you're a busy man, so we appreciate you stopping in the studio and giving us some more insight on the merger. Very, very exciting stuff. And well, we look forward to seeing that schedule on Monday. Going to be very, very exciting. And, you know, I know there's a lot of hard work that goes into that. So it'll certainly be a lot of fun for us to take a look at that. And congratulations on that merger. I know that's huge news, and it's very, very exciting moving forward. And, again, we appreciate you stopping by.
Outstanding. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Steve. Again, that's Steve Tasler, Deputy Commissioner with the Frontier League, stopping by to talk about the merger that they announced yesterday with the Can-Am League. And don't forget, that schedule's coming out on Monday. Should be really, really awesome this coming summer in 2020 to see how that affects the men of Crush. They'll get going in the middle of May. Time for a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. In just a moment, Your Money Now, then Matt Douglas with the local news here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.
Murray Ridge Center reminds you that October is National Disability Employment Awareness Month. Murray Ridge Center, helping individuals with developmental disabilities achieve employment in partnership with more than 100 local businesses.
Black River, Buckeye, Brunswick, Cloverleaf, Highland.